On Unplugged, where we cut through the noise, no scripts, no filters, just the truth. What an exciting episode of Unplugged. I'm like jumping through my skin here. Brett over here, wait, right, I'm off my rocker. Right, Gary, am I a little like excited today?
The way out the wall.
Oh my God, I can't. Ready, folks? Let me get into my monologue. Our guest tonight is John Kiriakou. Former CIA officer, intelligence analyst, covert counterintelligence officer. He is infamously, however respectfully, but infamously known for breaking the silence on waterboarding and what was otherwise known as enhanced interrogation techniques, which we all do know now was torture, which we all know provided zero in good actionable intelligence. John has lived a tough life with decisions that have marked and changed his life. And on Sanati's show, folks, you know we pull back that curtain, we call a spade, and we're going to tell you who John really is without the spin. Let's get through it. He's lived through many things, and we're going to get him on in a second. He exposed something just was so despicable that our country would be engaged in, and he'll get into it a little bit more. You all know who he is. He's got several books out. He's everywhere online. I respect that because I know the heavy weight of what silence can be. And John and I will talk about that because we know each other and we're going to have a nice combo. I suffer in silence. He suffer in silence. In a world where truth isn't convenient, it's dangerous. Truth is dangerous. And tonight, we're going to talk about the danger. Let's bring in John. Welcome, John, to Unplugged.
Thanks, Eric. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
John, it is absolute pleasure. Let's just chat for a second. How is life for you right now?
You know, things have finally turned around. It took the better part of a decade and a half. But so
I got things to look up for.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a cliche that things really do get better, but they actually do get better. So you got to just stick with it. Keep your nose down and work as hard as you can. Good things come.
The silence is tough. You know what I mean? Because you have to be beat up publicly and you can't actually say the truth.
Yeah, and in that period where you need support the most, that's when people are the most likely to abandon you. You really get to see who your friends are, who your real friends are. And right. And even family members will decide right. that
your family members abandon me. Yeah,
I did too.
You know, John, we're going to start off on one little note. I'm not going to name a country or an AOR. You're a legend. We served in the same location, and I read some of your stuff. You are amazing.
I had a good time there.
Had a great location.
Yeah.
What a great
place.
Not many people think it's a great location, but we had a good time. You're a legend of your own world. I mean, truly.
Thank you for that, Eric.
You know, I watched you on some other shows. We are a radio show, so we're live on iHeart. But we will be downloadable in every podcast about 30 minutes after the show airs live. But I watched some people do some sandbagging to you. So I want to start with one thing, John. You know that I'm a trained lawyer and I'm a constitutional. I got my book coming out on the Constitution. Let's get the facts straight, folks. John was charged federally, not for exposing national secrets that put the country in jeopardy. He never did that. He never was convicted or actually anything with that. He was charged with a very weird, it's like that UCMJ, the Uniform Code of Military right. Justice catch-all, right?
Right?
Basically for identifying an undercover intelligence officer's name, which you accidentally said. And I know we don't want to say it, but tell me how that worked out for you. Because I want people to know that you were not a traitor to your nation.
No. The traitors were the ones that put us in a position to do more harm to the country
right. than torturing
prisoners and violating the Constitution.
You gave up no secrets.
No. In fact, at first, the Justice Department charged me with 3 counts of espionage for blowing the whistle on the torture program, and then they declassified the program, in their words, for the purpose of prosecution.
Right. And they overreach.
And then they waited until I went bankrupt. And then when I went bankrupt, they dropped all
the activity. That's what they do. And, you know, there is legislation for using the justice system, which we know gets weaponized.
All
the, you know, selective prosecution, right? There's supposed to be statutes for that. And they selectively prosecuted you. Because we could name, and we're not going to, several people that did far worse.
Oh, listen, I'll name several people who...
Good, name it on my show. Do it.
Who exposed the names... Wait a minute. The people who exposed the names of covert operatives, like David Petraeus exposed the names of 10 covert operatives to his adulterous girlfriend. And there was a disgruntled former CIA officer.
Pillow talk, right.
Yeah. And there was a disgraced former CIA officer from Bethesda, Maryland, who outed 7 CIA officers undercover.
From the Bush administration.
Scooter Libby never exposed anybody's name.
Didn't he get nailed for something? What did he go down for?
He went down for perjury. It was the Deputy Secretary of State who exposed Valerie Plame.
Okay, right. Yeah, I mean, I think that was pivotal for me to get out there, because nobody seems to want to tell that side, because, you know, that actually kind of vindicates you tremendously.
Yeah.
Now you've gotten your life together. I understand you're going on a very large speaking engagement.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a year-long around-the-world speaking tour, starting in 2 weeks in Ireland and Northern Ireland. If you're in Ireland, we're going to be in Belfast, Cork, and Dublin, and then a quick side trip to Manchester. It's being
run by on Ireland, since you're talking about it. What do you think about Belfast and Dublin? You know, as that split of Ireland, do you think that's ever going to rectify?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I hope so.
Among the British people, they don't want Northern Ireland.
Right.
It's too much trouble to deal with. Now, since the Good Friday Peace Accords, it's been better. But what threw a wrench into the situation was the UK's decision to withdraw from the European Union.
Right.
Because Ireland's in the European Union and Britain's not in the European Union. You know, they haven't quite figured out exactly the best workable way to handle the border. It's going to be a big problem.
And I know you're into the Greek, and I believe we both puddle hopped into Cyprus. I actually, Brett, you know, I was talking to a guy from Cyprus yesterday. Actually, that, you know, well, I'll hit you offline with him. He's a NATO guy. And he was like, what is that language he was looking at? I'm like, oh, it's Greek, but I was using a translator. I can't speak Greek. I understand, was the only person in CIA that can speak Greek and Arabic.
Yeah, as crazy as it sounds, I was the only person in the entire CIA that had both Greek and Arabic. That's why they sent me to Athens. They sent me to Athens primarily to do Arab terrorism, secondarily to do Greek terrorism, but it was the Greek terrorists that kept us busy all the time.
Tell us, how did your federal prison experience turn out? You know where I'm going with this. It's pretty funny.
You know, we incarcerate far, far too many.
Well, I wrote an article about that. Yeah, it's terrible.
You know, you know the statistics then. We have 5% of the world's population.
Yeah, the worst in the world. Yeah, absolutely.
We have 5% of the world's population. We have 25% of the world's prison population. And Congress creates 50 new crimes, 50 new felonies every single year. That's something that was legal a year ago that is a felony today. And it's just over the top.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but I had as easy a time as a person could have.
Tell us how it worked out for you when you got there.
I got adopted by the Italians when I arrived. And
really?
You know, I mean, Italians named Gambino and Lucchese and Bonanno and, you know, Conte.
Eva Conte?
Yeah. And so they took good care of me.
You had good sausage, I understand.
I gained 35 pounds in prison
so
because of those guys.
Good fella, like, I know they brought you wine. You got the good life.
Wine and pork loin and fresh vegetables and pasta. And
yeah.
Good.
But you originally, they were trying to link you up with the Aryan Nation people.
Yeah, the Aryans were the first ones to approach me. And, you know,
I know that the Muslims also supported you.
Yeah, it was less support than it was.
Personally, I think they were afraid of you.
No. My first day in prison, one of the Nation of Islam guys came up to me and very gingerly handed me a newspaper. It was the Call, it was called. It was the Nation of Islam newspaper. And he said that Reverend Farrakhan had said that I was a hero of the Muslim people and that I wouldn't have any problem with them. And so that was it. I never spoke to them again. So. Yeah. Right. So and they'll hurt you. So the Aryans were the ones that first approached me. And they demand paperwork when you first arrive. You have to show an official BOP form saying what your crime was. And mine was this obscure violation of
No one ever heard of such a thing.
Protection Act of 1981. And so because I wasn't gay, I wasn't a rat, and I wasn't a child molester, then I was okay with the Aryans.
So how did the five families approach you?
I lived across the hall from a captain in the Banana.
Can I ask, because obviously we both know who it is. Can you say it or no?
I'd kind of like to leave him out of it, because not only was he good to me, but we remain friends and we remain in touch. And I think I should leave him out. But he asked me one day, I had a subscription to the New York Times and he had a subscription to the New York Post. And so at the end of the day, we would trade papers. And then we would sit and watch, you know, football together, sometimes baseball. And so he asked me one day, he says, let me ask you a question. Why do you sit with those Nazi retards in the cafeteria? And I said, I don't know. When my first day here, they looked at my paperwork. They told me to sit with them. And he said, from today, you're with the Italians.
Well, you're Greek. You're close to the Romans.
Yeah. Very much so. And, you know, in all seriousness,
you had a bodyguard service that walked everywhere you walked in the facility.
It wasn't for me so much as it was for the actual boss of the Gambino
would
family.
It be the person that I sent you a picture of him and I?
Oh, no. It was somebody above him.
Oh, the other guy. All right. Yeah. I gotcha. He wasn't there when you were there, the picture I sent
you. No, we just missed each other.
Yeah, I thought so. And
But everybody knows where everybody else is. Like, there was a guy, there was another guy, Anthony.
You know a guy, right?
they do. They all know a guy, and they all have these networks on the outside. And so 2 weeks in advance, we knew so-and-so was coming, or this other guy was coming, and he's a stand-up guy, or he's a rat, or whatever. And so you know how to treat people.
He's a friend of ours.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, honestly, the Mafia did a Lucky Luciano work for the agency during World War II.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, the Mafia saved America.
The Brooklyn ports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what created the Longshoremen Union. And that's why they get left alone forever.
That's right.
So tell me, what has been the most difficult thing that you've had to overcome because of all this nonsense? No one has done the right thing.
Yeah, that's actually an easy question. You know, most people in prison think that when their sentence is up, they can just step back into their lives again. And you can't. You don't realize how depressed you are. You don't realize how much anxiety you have. And you certainly don't realize that you're suffering from PTSD.
Yeah.
And you get out and you think you can just start right back up again. And you can't. That's number one. Number two, many people also underestimate the impact that the whole experience had on their families. That's hard too.
Right.
Maybe the hardest though is you just will not be able to get a job, period. Right. You and I were talking offline. I got rejected at every grocery store. I got rejected at Target and McDonald's. And I got rejected as a baggage handler at the airport. I couldn't buy a job. And so, you know, I had a couple of little bones thrown my way. I got a job at a think tank in Washington. They wanted me to write about, you know, prison reform issues,
but
they
gave me
minimum wage. And I'm a good writer. I've published, you know, 8 books so far. I made the New York Times bestsellers list. I won one of the country's 4 biggest literary awards. So I'm a good writer, but I was making 24 grand.
I think the reluctant spine was your best one.
Thank you. That's the one that and doing time like Aspire, the two that
I like that too, but I didn't like the prison aspect because I just felt like it was tough.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's funny. That's the only one of my books that I've not reread.
I believe it because you probably hurt during that one.
Yeah, my heart starts to race.
And you know, the next question is going to make your heart race, but it's not a sandbag question. So exposing something as powerful as CIA's interrogations program isn't an easy decision. And I truly honor and respect the fact that you did that because you saved lives.
Thank you.
A lot of people did not want to be there for that.
Oh, I appreciate it.
I remember that. I know when that went down, they weren't sure where stuff was coming from and everybody got yanked into skiffs. For folks out there that don't know what a skiff is, would you like to tell them what a skiff is?
Yeah, it's a secure communications center. It's a secure, it's like a vaulted area. It can be as small as a little conference room. It can be as big as the entire floor of a building. But it's got windows that can't be penetrated by laser beams. It's soundproofed. You can leave classified documents out in a skiff and not.
When this came out, they didn't know where everything was coming from, John. So they were pulling everybody into skiffs and they were making people sit there. And they were the forensics guys were going through computers like crazy.
Well, I'll tell you what, that actually wasn't me. I blew the whistle all at once in a nationally televised interview on ABC News in December.
Yeah, what's his name? What was
Brian Ross.
Yes.
But there had been leaks starting in 2005.
I was in that location in 05, actually.
Amnesty International came out with a report saying that CIA was torturing its prisoners. Human Rights Watch came out with a report in 06 saying CIA is torturing its prisoners. American and International Red Cross did a report in 07, CIA is torturing its prisoners. I confirmed it. I was not the originator of the information.
It was already out there, so you didn't expose anything.
And that's why the Bush administration didn't charge me with a crime. They said that the information
maybe
was...
Because he knew what he was doing, they shouldn't be doing either.
Yeah, it's a crime to classify a crime.
I mean, that's an international war crime. So when you made that call to speak out, did you feel like the system that you served for so long? And let's get real. You started off in a desk job. And you were pre 9/11, myself 9/11 too. That's what got me into the game. And you went operational as myself.
Well, I went operational in 97. So I had a couple of operational tours, all in counterterrorism operations before that. And then I had also finished the advanced counterterrorism operations course. So I was ready to go.
Yes, but you took that one, or you're not allowed to say?
I can't say. Yeah, they split it up into different facilities. It was all domestic though.
Out west, right, with the driving and stuff?
Yeah. The driving one was out west.
You drove the big Ranger trucks and the expeditions? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good times, right?
Yeah, I loved it.
Hey, listen, are we the best drivers, though?
Oh, my God, still to this day.
I mean, you can't trade. You can't follow me.
It's funny. They drill that training into you so hard.
It's muscle.
I took that class. I took the first running of it in 1993. I took the second running in the spring of 2000. So we're talking about 25 years ago, I took that course. And still in my mind, I remember it like I took it last week.
Yeah, it's just muscle memory.
It is.
It's like, I mean, I guess all the counter surveillance stuff. I mean, my head is on a swivel 24/7, no matter what.
Yeah.
I see everything, you know, operationally, I'm prepared 24/7. So I wanted to ask, so did you feel like, I mean, obviously I know how you felt, but did you think that they were going to not fully turn against you the way they did? Because so many people do applaud you, but they were afraid to speak out.
You know, and that's the reason why I waited.
For clearances, if anybody said anything, God forbid. Yeah.
I waited for 4 years before I said it. I said something. 4.5 years. Because I kept waiting for somebody else to come out and do it. There were so many people reporting back from the secret site that they were objecting, like vehemently objecting to this torture program.
Can I say the location of the specific site?
You can. I can't.
All right. I won't then, because I know, because I was right close to there. So
it's never been declassified. So I just call it the secret.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So I just expected somebody to come forward and do something about it. And nobody did. And then
they were going to charge you. Honestly, it dragged on forever.
Yeah, it dragged on forever. I mean, the Bush administration elected to not charge me. They sent my attorney a declination letter saying that they had concluded that I hadn't broken the law. And then,
you know, I know Obama was talking about pardoning you.
No, he wasn't.
There was conversation about people. That was scuttlebutt on that. No, I know you're a fan of his book. You read it for Solace or something.
I hated his book.
No, but you had it on the interview with that.
Oh, yeah. It was so self-serving.
Was that a nephew? Is that what I get it now?
Somebody dropped it off.
A little Barry fund.
The Greek American community rallied to my side, and there were several very important Greek Americans that asked him to pardon me. And his exact words were, "Guys, I'm just not going to do this. It's either him or it's Manning." And Manning got 35 years. And so I didn't get it.
Now we're both going to be in the same location next week. Do you think that gentleman we're going to be at the same event? Is you think he'll help you?
I don't know, man.
He's not a fan of three-letter agencies.
No, he's not. And he's been a supporter of mine. You know,
he is. And he spoke out publicly about you.
He did. He tweeted at me when he was president, and
we've got a
bunch of friends in common. I'm hoping that something good can come of it.
Unbelievable. You know, operational insight programs like these just don't appear. They're built and approved over time. And my question is, who's the architect of this program? Do we even know that? Obviously it's classified at that. I don't know your level. I mean, I know your level of what we got. This is probably USAP, isn't it?
Well, you know, there's an old saying that success has 1,000 fathers, but failure has but one.
Right.
in the agency, they still consider this to be a successful program. And so there are a dozen different people that
I can't name one time I saw any piece of actionable intel that was actually verifiable.
No, there was
that none. That produced anything.
There was none.
I mean,
zero.
I mean, we've all been waterboarded, and it's terrible. I mean,
and you will tell your torturer anything.
Anything to make that stop.
Wants to hear, just to make him stop.
Why don't you explain to people what it really feels like?
Oh, it very much feels like you're drowning.
Yeah, you're dying.
In many cases, like in the case of Abu Zubaydah, he did drown. And his heart stopped.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Tate.
So that he could be tortured more.
You know, that program actually created some of the combat medic programs because the doctors would no longer do it because of the Hippocratic Oath.
That's right.
So actually, that kind of advanced army medicine. Because combat medics are now PAs, because somebody needed to do this.
They objected in writing, most of them, too. I mean, there were doctors from the CIA's Office of Medical Services writing cables and saying, whoa, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this. I took an oath to first do no harm. I'm not going to drown this guy. And many of them curtailed their assignments, which is a career-ending decision.
Right, once you do that, your game's over.
Some of them, you know, resigned.
Now, you have no pension anything now.
No, they seized my pension.
Is that disgrace?
Yeah. Like,
all the good things you've done. And honestly, again, folks out there, we're going commercial free on this show. Again, folks, John will be on the Hostile Zone Monday night, 7 p.m. on iHeartRadio. You'll be back again for some different conversation with a different crowd. Got to put that plug in. But again, folks, he was never, ever convicted nor really charged of disclosing government secrets or anything like that. You didn't Edward Snowden.
No,
Chelsea Manning. No. What is it? Bradley Manning, Chelsea Manning? What is he?
Who knows?
Whatever. And they let him into Harvard?
They did?
Yeah. They gave him an admission to Harvard. Yeah, I know. Did I just ruin your day even more? You're going on your speaking engagement next week. You're going to be a millionaire. Don't worry about it.
I will say, I met Chelsea Manning once, her request. But Chelsea Manning is not a part of the whistleblower community, either in government or in Washington or nationally. Not a player. Not a participant. Nobody that I know is in contact with her. Oh, Snowden's a giant. Yeah, Snowden's a giant. And I have the deepest possible respect for him. You know, I wouldn't have done it the way he did it.
I bring up an interview you did with somebody? Andrew?
Andrew Bustamante.
Yeah, Bustamante. Andrew. He looked a lot different years ago. What was that show? Whose show were you on?
That was the Danny Jones podcast.
Okay, yeah, I like Danny.
Concrete.
I think he's an asset.
He is.
Lex Freeman. Is Lex Freeman an asset? Lex Freeman, is he an asset?
I don't have any idea.
I think he might be an NOC. I don't know.
Well, if he is, you just committed a felony.
He's really good. Now I'm just talking joke here. He's so good at what he's just really the best. He really is good. Have you been on his show, Lex?
No.
He is so calculated with his questions. He is really good.
That's how Danny Jones is. Danny Jones,
he's great too.
He's a gifted interviewer.
And when my executive producer, she's going to get the clip. So Andrew Bustamante is a former CIA officer himself.
Yes.
He has a thing called Everyday Spy, I believe.
That's right.
And he basically sells tradecraft to businesses to promote business. Whatever. I have no comment on what he does with his life. I really have nothing negative. Andrew, I got nothing negative to say about you. But what happened to you on that particular episode, it was a nice conversation, and Danny called you a traitor. And he said, you and Snowden. Tell us what happened.
Danny Jones had asked us months in advance if we would agree to a debate, and I readily said yes.
It was spirited up until then.
And it was spirited. And the truth is, we agreed on probably 75% of what we were talking about.
But then he just slipped on you.
Yeah.
Tell him what image. She's going to run the clip, but tell us what happened. I mean, how did you feel at that moment? I mean, talk about being sandbagged.
Oh, no, listen. To me, he's just some kid who happened to spend a couple of years in the agency. I was not intimidated by him at all. And, you know, a few days before that debate, I remember thinking, should I prepare for this in some way? And then I thought, no, if I don't know these issues by now, I'm never going to know them. I'm like one of the country's leading experts on these issues.
Right. You speak everywhere.
I speak everywhere all the time. And I've written, you know, seven of my books are about the CIA. So no, I don't need to prepare. And my attorney later texted me. He's not just a constitutional lawyer, Harvard and Harvard Law. He was also the Deputy Attorney General of the United States. And he texted me and he said, you gave that kid a masterclass in the Constitution.
You schooled
him. I did. I was very proud of my
performance. You know, I'd like that.
He got frustrated. And so he called me a traitor. because I had a show on a Russian radio network.
But it was sanctioned here in the United States.
Yeah, it was terrestrial radio here in the
United States. Correct? Sputnik.
Yeah,
with Sputnik. Based in Washington, D.C., and was sanctioned on the airways here in America.
Yeah.
It's like BBC. What do you call your trade if you're on BBC?
Exactly.
There we go, folks. There it is. So, John, let's get pissed. Let's get to something better. I just wanted to set the record straight for you on that.
Thank you.
So, your experience came from much of real-world operation versus political pressure from the people who have been in the field. Now, we know how it works in this game. You get a pencil-neck political appointee that comes in and thinks that they're going to change a career, operative, analyst, agent, officer, whatever, and you know that they're going to do that. How did that affect you? Because you know that those are the people that came at you hard. It wasn't agency insiders coming for you. It was political hacks.
It was political hacks who had been agency insiders. Yeah.
The political hacks, I mean, are the lifetime agency people that have been in there and they're never going anywhere. That's what I'm talking. So you got your political appointees and then these people that are forever.
No, there are no political appointees at the CIA other than the director.
Director. But I mean, like the high level SES, Special Executive Service, whatever.
Yeah, we have the senior intelligence service, SIS.
And then
they're there for 25, 30, 35 years. Yeah, and they don't leave. Now, John Brennan had left. He had retired and had gone.
Let's not get started on John Brennan now.
Yeah. I mean, he had gone
to. I got in trouble for some comments I made about him on a show once. Yeah. We both went silent. Well, here's the mutual respect. I want to take a second to acknowledge the risks that you took. That kind of decision, just I can't imagine, because obviously, well, you know what happened to me, and you know that I can't say anything. Maybe you can help me with that. What do you think? I mean, what say you on that? On me with that?
I was completely directionless when I got home from prison. I was in prison for 23 months. Had this minimum wage job. Went to work for a very, very small medical devices company, completely on commission. Was not able to contribute to the well-being of my family. And so I just decided to, well, actually, it was my ex-wife. We were still married at the time. And she said,
it broke your family up.
She said, you have to embrace this. You can't like hide from it. You have to embrace it. And you've got a soapbox.
Very tough.
So she was right. I started writing like
that's a crazy person. That's what I'm doing.
And, you know, it got to the point where a publishing house called me and they commissioned a book that turned out to be my third book. And
which
I said,
was that?
That was The Convenient Terror.
I like that one. That was
cool. Thank you. That's out of all my books, that one is the most highly rated.
Very operational. Very operational. Like very hanging on the seat of your chair.
I tried hard to make it like that, to make it read like a novel.
And we'll be sure to put plugs. You have at the end, give us links to where they can get these books.
Oh, thanks. They're all on Amazon.
Cool.
So the publishing house called me and said, can you write this book? I said, yeah, sure. I need the money anyway. And they said,
get clearance from the agency to write your books?
If I write a letter to Home and Garden magazine, I need a clearance from the agency.
How long did it take you to get a return for approval?
Well, they asked me if I would write this book. I said yes, and they said, "Well, we need it in 30 days." And I said, "30 days?" I said, "It takes me 9 months to write a book."
All right.
And they said, "Yeah, we need it in 30 days." So I told my wife, "I am going to sit at this computer every day, and I'm not going to get up until I've written at least 1,000 words." Wow. I started writing the day after Thanksgiving, and I finished the day before Christmas and got it out in 30 days. And then I thought, you know what? I'm actually pretty good at this book thing. So then they came back and they commissioned four
more. Was it Penguin House, right? Penguin House?
No, it was my first was Random House. My second was an imprint of Simon & Schuster. This was Skyhorse.
Okay.
So they did my third through my seventh, and then I shopped my eighth book around and they took it. They took the eighth book as well. So, I mean, I have my best relationship with Skyhorse. They're wonderful, wonderful. And they did Bobby Kennedy's book, and they did Melania Trump's book, and they have some big name authors. But they've done right by me. Yeah. So I just decided, you know what? The more I write, the more I'm going to get out there, and the more I get out there, the more I'm going to rehabilitate myself. And it culminated the week before COVID started. I got a call from the commandant of West Point inviting me to speak the first year class on ethics in intelligence operations.
Right. You're now a champion in the game.
Yeah, it worked out. And then that led to countless podcasts and the podcast.
Suffering in silence. That's what I'm asking. Like when you're like, you know, well, you know what's going on with me.
Yeah.
So what I've experienced, it's tough. You can't say anything, and you got to sit there, and you got to be the dirtbag that people want to say. You know, that's not true.
That's where you're wrong. That's where you're wrong. You can say something. You can say the government's full of shit. The cops are full of shit. I didn't do what they're accusing me of doing. And if they want to have this argument, let's have it in public.
Oh, you saw it. Do you think any of that was real with me?
Come on. No, of course not.
Thank you. Heard it right from a real professional here. There you go. I mean, it's terrible. They did it. And, you know, you see who wrote some of that stuff. And you see their narrative of who they are.
Well, there was a hatchet job by NPR. And NPR tried a hatchet job on me, too. And, you know, it's funny.
They did the same as they did me.
Well, they tried. And I wouldn't stand for it. So they called me and they said, hey, we'd like to have you on whatever that show is on Saturday mornings. I forget, whatever it is. And so I said, yeah, sure, because I always say yes. So I go all the way up to NPR up on Capitol Hill, and they're so nice to me. Oh, here's a bottle of water. Here's a cup of coffee. They bring me into the studio. We sat down. As soon as they hit the record button, they attack. And I said, oh, no, you don't.
I wouldn't answer their calls when they called me. I said, I don't know who you
are. I said, oh, no, you don't. I'm not going to take it from you or from anybody else. I said, listen, I don't answer to NPR. I said, if you're gonna invite me to come on and have a conversation, I'll come on and have a conversation.
It would,
but if you're going to invite me on just to attack me, I'm not going to play games like that with you. And I got up and I walked out. They actually clipped it down to like 2 minutes.
I didn't even get on an interview on
Saturday morning. I just ignored it. I got a call from a professor friend of mine who said, wow, I just heard this clip on NPR. You really gave it to him. And I was like, huh, I can't believe they had the balls to actually run it. But they never called me again. And that's perfectly fine with me.
Now, what happened, but another news outlet, which I don't want to spark a war with them again. I could not get anybody to interview me at all, which was terrible. I mean, and you know the facts of this stuff. You know it's complete nonsense, and you know who I am, and you know me. So I don't need to go any further with that. I did do an interview on my phone, and I sent it to them, and they took 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And they had an interview.
They're quite good at that.
They are quite good at that. Because it ran in narrative. But that sheriff is out of office.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, John.
That's good. Well, I'll tell you a funny story. I got a call one time. This is in like 17 or 18. I got a call from the Washington Post. And I've written for the Post a couple of times. It's not unusual for them to call me. But the guy calls, the reporter, and he said, hey, I was wondering if I could get a quote from you on Peter Strzok. You remember Peter Strzok was the FBI agent who had texted his adulterous girlfriend about Trump.
Yeah, the craziness. So, it never happened, but it was right there. Right.
So I said, well, I'm happy to talk to you guys, but I don't know any more about Peter Strzok than what I've read in the Washington Post. And he says, no, Peter Strzok is the FBI agent who arrested you. And I said, that was Peter Strzok?
He was new.
He said, yeah, I went through the paperwork, and it was Peter Strzok who put the cuffs on you. I said, oh, yeah, I'll give you a comment.
I'll give you a comment now.
And I said, in Washington, people have long memories. And karma's a bitch.
Thank you.
And that's what they printed.
And you know what? And the downfall lies. It happens.
And they escorted him out of FBI headquarters. They took his gun and his badge and took him by the arms and escorted him out of FBI headquarters, just as he deserved.
Absolutely. But did he get charged, really?
No. The son of a gun raised over $120,000 on GoFundMe to pay his legal bills too, which really made me mad.
And he donated to the Biden administration too, I thought.
I think he probably did because he never ended up going to trial.
He was looking for a pardon, yeah. So did you watch any of the hearings on the Hill?
Yeah.
Did you see Pete handled himself well?
He did. You know, out of all the
Pete, he's an incoming Secretary of Defense.
Pete. Formerly of Fox News. Listen, for me personally, I think he's a terrible choice because he's not qualified.
I think that's what Trump wants, though. He wants a man of assault.
You don't put somebody with no qualifications in charge of a $1 trillion company with 3 million employees. Like, what are you thinking?
He handled himself like a pro today, though.
Yeah, you know, like, but the questions were, you know, when did you stop beating your wife? Well, when you fathered that child.
You think that was really appropriate, though?
Yeah.
Does that have anything to do with this position?
But it has to do with character.
Okay, I get you. I guess clearance purposes, right? But hey, yeah. Barack Obama didn't qualify for security clearance.
Sure he did.
Really?
It was reported
there were some issues.
No, he was a member of the Intelligence Committee.
I don't know. I'm just telling you reports that came across, and I'm not telling you anything classified here. I just read, again, I wasn't involved with that point. But,
He was not a Muslim. He was not a communist.
I don't want him coming after me, but strike that. What do you think of Tulsi Gabbard?
Like her a lot.
Like her a lot. You think she's going to make institutional change in the IC?
No, and I'll tell you why.
Tell me why.
There are 18 intelligence agencies that make up the American...
Did you watch my episode on that? No. I did a whole episode identifying each one.
Well, there are only two members of the intelligence community that do not fall under the jurisdiction of the Secretary of Defense. CIA and the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research.
Right.
And so the only thing that Tulsi Gabbard's going to be in charge of is the intelligence community budget, which is important,
right,
but not important.
And the DIA has a major influence on the DIA.
No.
And the NRO, no?
No. Those are both DOD agencies.
Oh, she is very connected with DOD.
No.
Right.
We're going to have a secretary.
Is she still in the Guard?
Or is she is. She's
going to have to resign from that now?
No.
Interesting.
No.
How that works. Right.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham is still an Air Force member of the Judge Advocate General.
I did not know that. Wow. I need to get him on the show. That'd be an interesting, interesting interview. Interesting.
So she has primacy over the intelligence community budget, and she also heads the PDB, the President's Daily Brief. That's it. Right.
The matrix.
It's John Ratcliffe that is going to be
the powerhouse. Yeah, the main player. Right. What do you think of Mike Flynn? He needs a pardon.
I personally would pardon Mike Flynn. I don't think Mike Flynn should have ever been charged with a crime.
Yeah, he was another one set up.
Yeah, I think he was set up. Now, I also think he should have been charged with not registering under FARA. He was clearly and obviously an agent.
John, explain FARA to the listeners.
If you are taking money from a foreign government for the purpose of promoting the positions or policies of that government, you have to fill out a form called the Foreign Agents Registration Act form, FARA. It takes 10 minutes. You go to FARA.gov and you just fill it out.
I mean, he wasn't doing anything illegal. He just needed to file it.
He did not file it, right. Yeah. He was representing the government.
Another stupid little government then.
He was representing the government of Turkey.
Right.
And never registered. And then there was famously reported in the Wall Street Journal about a week before Donald Trump became president. There was a meeting in a New York hotel where Flynn was meeting with members of the Turkish National Intelligence Organization, the TINIO. And former CIA director Jim Woolsey went to the meeting.
Whatever happened to that guy?
He was 5 minutes late. And when he walked in, Flynn was offering the Turks. He was offering to kidnap Fethullah Gulen, a Turkish oppositionist who lived outside of Pittsburgh, and turn him over to the Turks. And Woolsey said, "Oh my God, you're committing a felony."
Is that the guy that has the perimeter around this property?
Yeah. And so Woolsey walked out of the meeting and then immediately called the FBI.
This is over that uprising that occurred in Turkey where they took the tanks and everything. I remember. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So Flynn should have been charged with that felony. He wasn't. He was charged for a felony that he actually didn't commit and got a pardon.
He's a good guy, though, honestly.
I think he's a religious nut, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Right, we're going to agree to disagree. I like Mike. What's your take on Pompeo?
Oh, Pompeo's a scumbag.
I was waiting for it.
You know, I have a friend who was one of Pompeo's bodyguards in the CIA's Office of Security. And we had lunch one day, and I said, "So how are things going over there?" And he said, "Let me tell you, the only person who is less popular than Mike Pompeo is Mrs. Mike Pompeo."
A good comment.
He said, "All she does is snap her fingers and say, walk the dog. You, go pick up my dry cleaning. You, shovel the snow." And they're like, "We're here to protect your husband."
So I want you to tell a funny story, and Kerry's going to have to bleep it out because we're radio.
Oh, well, that's right.
A guy that made a comment to you about a genitalia. Tell that story. I love it.
About genitalia.
Remember he said, "I have a bigger than you"?
Oh, that was when I got...
That's a great story.
When I got hired to the agency. No, it's okay for radio.
Okay.
I mean, the truth of the story is okay for radio. I was in grad school at George Washington University.
Tell them how that works, because people don't understand how NOC positions work. So
I was not a knock officer.
No, I mean, this guy was.
No, he was.
Wasn't a professor saying, "I'm not really a professor"?
Yeah, he wasn't.
So, yeah, explain that too to the people.
where do you want me to start?
Both stories. Both stories. I'm trying to get it all in time frame.
So I was in grad school at George Washington University. I was taking this class called The Psychology of Leadership. It was taught by Dr. Gerald Post, who was a psychiatrist, an eminent psychiatrist. He had a PhD in political science, a PhD in psychology, and an MD, all from Yale. And
Skull and Bones guy?
Oh, I have no idea. I doubt it. He was Jewish.
Not going to happen. Okay.
Yeah. So he assigned us this paper where we had to shadow our bosses for a week and then write a psychological evaluation of our bosses. And I was working for a union at the time, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. And I was working for this guy who was a real tough guy, like old school union organizer. He had had his back broken during a strike. Scabs beat him up and broke his back. Real tough guy. And I was a little bit afraid of him. So I'm shadowing him this one week, and we got into an argument, and I called him a racist. And he squared up and put his fists up in the air, and I put up my hands to protect myself. And I thought, oh no, I went too far this time. But instead of hitting me, he says, "My penis is bigger than yours." And I said, "What?" And he said it again, "My penis is bigger than yours." And I said, "You know what? You're nuts." And I quit. And I walked out. I quit. So I went back to my apartment. I wrote this paper, and I wrote it very comprehensively and passed the paper in. A week later, I get the paper back, and I'd gotten an A. And Dr. Post wrote in the margin, "Please see me after class." So I went up to him after class and said, "Dr. Post, you wanted to see me." And he said, "Yeah, close the door." So I closed the door, and he said, "Look, I'm not really a professor here. I'm undercover. I'm a CIA officer undercover as a professor here."
Oh, are you saying that professors could possibly be actually working in the intelligence community and placed in as a professor?
Until 1993, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, in 1993, I mean, before 1993, this is the way that people got recruited.
Right.
This is the way that most operations officers were recruited. That's why everybody was white. Everybody was male. Everybody went to a great school on the East Coast. You know, that's just the way it was. And then in 1993, Congress passed the Equal Employment Opportunity Act.
Ooh, DEI. We'll talk about that in a minute.
And yeah, I mean, it inadvertently weakened the agency, to tell you the truth. But yeah, he made some calls. I mean, I had to do it all on my own. I had to take the tests, pass the tests, polygraphs, background investigation. You have to give them some of your blood, some of your piss, some of your hair, psychological testing.
Did they take your leg for hair, or did they take it from your head?
No, they plucked it because they need the root. They plucked it from your head. And then I made it. I made it. And but they don't do that anymore. Now they do it overtly. It's something similar, but it's overt, where they created this program.
Like a forward-facing job is what I was trying to articulate.
Say that again?
So people have positions that are a forward-facing position, but they're exactly. Really doing something else.
Exactly.
And that's kind of, you know where I'm going with this, John.
Yeah, so what they do now, they have this program called the Scholar in Residence Program. So if you're 2 or 3 years before retirement, they'll ask you if you want to go back to your alma mater as a CIA officer who's going to teach a couple of classes. And then while you're there, you essentially do the same kind of spotting. You just don't do it secretly. You do it overtly.
Now, since you kind of touched on that, can you explain a little bit what a unrecognized, like an NOC sort of is?
Yeah, a NOC officer. NOC stands for National, I'm sorry, it stands for Non-Official Cover. So Amaryllis Fox Kennedy, who is Bobby Kennedy's daughter-in-law and was his campaign manager. She's now rumored to be the next deputy national security advisor.
I hear that, yeah.
She was a NOC officer. So where I was under official cover working in American embassies around the world, and most CIA officers are under official cover.
It's only like 10% are NOCs.
Yeah, less than that. It's more like 6. So she was an art dealer. That was her cover. Or, you know, maybe you can be a wildlife photographer or the head of a mutual. No, because you're not going to come into contact with people who have the information that you want.
If you were in, like, the New York area, post 9/11.
Yeah, we wouldn't have a NOC officer domestically.
In FDNY, right.
Well, I mean, unless the firefighter is a Muslim and is going to go into a mosque. But otherwise, who gives a kid?
Deep conversation there.
Yeah.
What did you think about that when they were going to build the mosque right there? On at Ground Zero.
Yeah, I consider myself a lifelong leftist, and I was adamantly opposed to that mosque. And I'll tell you why. And my position is comes from a selfish place, and I don't care, and I don't make any excuses.
Make any problems, right?
But the reason I felt so strongly about it is there was one church at Ground Zero. It was St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church. It was built in 1927, and it was there from the beginning, right? 50 years, 45 years later was when the towers went up. And so our church was right there at the towers. It was vaporized on 9/11. And so if any religious building, any house of worship was going to be built,
right,
it was going to be the Greek Orthodox Church of St. Right. Nicholas. And that's what is now at Ground Zero.
Right. Have you been down to Ground Zero since? I've never been in after.
Many times.
I've never gone into the museum or even been into the tower.
I'm not exaggerating when I tell you it took me 20 years before I could go into the museum.
I have never gone. I've never done it.
It was too painful. Yeah, it was too much. I finally went through it a year ago.
And you were at the Pentagon at the time. You were in headquarters.
I was at CIA headquarters, yeah.
I understand you and your wife watched the burning from the house, and you're like, I got to go back to work.
Yeah, yeah. We went to the roof of the apartment building, watched the Pentagon burn.
Stole from the Marriott.
Yeah, we did. We stole $10,000, $15,000 worth of food from the Marriott. The Marriott ran the cafeteria at the CIA, and when everybody evacuated on 9/11, they chained it closed. And so a bunch of us at the Counterterrorism Center, we broke the lock and the chain, and we just cooked all the food and just laid it out for everybody to graze on, because we were there for days, like without leaving. I slept under my desk, you know, an hour or two at a time. Everybody did. And so
I got another good question for you that you never get asked. And we talked about it before. You were involved with the movie Zero Dark Thirty.
No, not Zero Dark Thirty. Dan Ellsberg called me when Zero Dark Thirty came out, and he said, you've got to do a review of this movie for the Washington Post, because you're the only person who could do it from a position of having been on the inside. And so I went to the movie. I was going to skip it. I went to see it, and I hated it because it perpetuated the lie that torture led to the location
It was actually a doctor that we ended up screwing over.
Yeah, it was. Who's still in prison.
He's still in prison.
In Pakistan. But I did consult on The Kite Runner. I consulted on Bruno. I consulted on Kill the Messenger, which is about, you know, the CIA and cocaine.
Something of Spies with DiCaprio?
No, I did True Lies, Schwarzenegger.
Schwarzenegger. I knew it was something. I couldn't remember.
I also did From Paris with Love with John Travolta. And they were kind to me. They even put a special thanks at the end of the movie.
Right. That's awesome. Nice. I mean, Hollywood is deeply in bed with the agencies.
Deeply.
I mean, I tell people all the time, look at the movie Argo.
Yeah. Yeah. Although that stuck as close to the truth as you
could. That's a good, that is legit.
That was a legit movie. You know, the CIA's Office of Public Affairs has a branch that's dedicated solely to liaising with Hollywood studios. Right. And that's something that the FBI did, you know, for 60 years before the CIA ever got involved.
Good PR.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hollywood loves it. They get all the access, the insider stuff. They get equipment. And we get to promote our image.
Yeah, that's right.
So we're coming up to a hard hold, but you're going to be back on the other show. Let me see when I had a whole bunch of things I want to say. Is there anything you want to ask me, John? I mean, we haven't chatted. Let's have it. Let's do the last 4 minutes. Let's have a convo. Hey, Brett here over here. Brett is dying. Sure. He's like a huge fan of yours, Brett.
Sure. Thank you.
And he's going to be a host of a new public safety show on iHeart.
Very good.
Brett Pierce. So good. Here's your chance, buddy.
Yeah, Eric's kind of selling me out, which is one of those good things, you know, especially when it comes from a good brand and a good name.
Yep.
First of all, John, war hero, you know, a lot of us here throughout the nation love some of the work.
John was he was a contractor with the military.
Thank you.
It was one of those things, you know, a great opportunity. Loved it. Loved what we did. But I just want to know personally, how are you doing now?
Oh, thank God. This is going to be a life-changing year for me. Personally, it's taken me 10 years to get back on my feet.
That's scary move for me to think.
It's hard. I won't sugarcoat it. My marriage broke up, and so I've gone it alone. So it was hard, but it really does turn around. You just have to work until you can't work anymore. I barely sleep. All I do is write. And in the end, it paid off. So this is going to be, you know, knock on wood, if I could find some wood.
Oh, knock on wood for you.
It's going to be the best group,
right? What's it called?
Yeah, it's called Tigers Lane Studios. It's based in London. They also represented the two DEA agents who killed Pablo Escobar. So I'm their second speaking client. And they've booked a 100 event, 1 year around the world speaking tour. We're already sold out in Belfast. We're almost sold out in, Belfast is the 29th. Dublin is the 30th. And Manchester, England is the first. We're adding Cork. And then I'm going to come back here for a few weeks and then go back to the UK for 42 dates in the UK.
Wow.
So if you go to tigerslanestudios.com, the schedule's there. And
we'll put that up for you.
Thank you.
Brett, how'd you feel your first moment on the air? See, I told you you could do it. He was stressing it all day. Please don't make me do this.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
What's the name of your show?
I'm a little nervous.
Put a plug for your show.
Public Safety Unplugged.
Public Safety Zone Unplugged.
Yes.
Going with the brand.
I love that he reminds me of the Zone. It's one of those things.
Well, you are on my network.
Yes, yes, yes.
And we have some of your friends, John, coming on too. So we're going to be, I'm looking forward to it. John was kind enough to introduce us to several talent.
Great.
So, John, what would you like to chat with me for 2 minutes about?
Well, rather than ask you questions, I want to reiterate what I said earlier. You know, it's been my experience, man, that this is not the way my life was supposed to play out.
Right. Yeah.
I was always the good kid. I got great grades. I went to good school, got a bachelor's degree, got a master's degree, did my PhD coursework, great schools, and went to the CIA, did really cool stuff, 12 exceptional performance awards, the Sustained Superior Performance Award. I met with presidents and kings and prime ministers. I went to 72 countries for my government. I wasn't supposed to end up in prison and on the unemployment line. But these things happen for a purpose. I've really come to believe that they happen for a purpose. And now that it's all said and done, I realize, and it wasn't a period of self-realization. It was John McCain who told me that this is why I was put on the earth, that the American people would never have had any idea what the government was doing in their name if I hadn't told them. So even though it seems like life may have taken a dump right on your head, there's a silver lining here. And that silver lining may be as simple and as obvious as putting a fire under your feet to get on the air and talk about these issues that other people are ignoring. So keep the faith.
The fake news is killing me, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so we have to confront that head on.
And that's why the hostile zone was created, and we're moving forward. But, you know, like I find to my bots and trolls, the same news story that has fake news always pops up number three. So I hired a major former government contractor to really spook it. And there's bots. There's somebody's paying bots to keep it up there. But you can never trace them. They're out of China.
I'm sure that that's true. And I'll tell you another thing. I had a real detractor.
I mean, you know how atrocious it is.
Oh, yeah. I had a detractor on Twitter who would just like hit me every day. She's constantly just hitting me. And I just ignored her. But she's got 250,000 followers. And then she went too far one night. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to sue. I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be that guy who's not going
to need a reference anymore. Somebody for that, because nobody wants help.
And I sued, and she fell apart immediately. First of all, within 48 hours, she agreed to pin a retraction for 6 months. It was a retraction that my attorney wrote, and then she had to apologize in a tweet every day for 30 days.
I love it.
And then she paid my legal fees.
Would you make a referral for me? Because where I'm at, they actually made threats if I brought somebody in from outside, but your guy is, they're not going to play with him.
Nope.
I would love that. I mean, you read the story.
48 hours.
It's atrocious.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, so John's going to be with us again on the Hostile Zone, and you'll get to meet the lovely Bianca S.E.A. What, have you heard her lovely voice? You need to pay attention. She's amazing. Her rendition of National Anthem is amazing. So, John, I ultimately thank you with sincere gratitude for what you've done for our nation. I wish you the best in your speaking engagement. I seriously was serious. I want tickets. Can you hook that up?
I'm sure I can.
Good, good, good. I'll be in the front row cheering you on, brother.
Fantastic.
And I will see you Monday night, John. You have any final saying word, 2 second word?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for a good conversation.
Great. This will be aired Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. And it will be on all the stations, and it'll be in every podcast 30 minutes after it airs. We will talk to you off air. Stay on for a second.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight last gleaming? Whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting. Still there,
and she's not going anywhere.
Oh, say does that star-spangled banner wave for the land of the free and the home.
We'll be right back.